Today is Thursday, August 12th, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, Amnesty International accuses Ethiopia and Eritrea forces of rape and abuse.
Women and children are bearing the brunt of the suffering in the ongoing fighting in Ethiopia's northern Tigray region.
Plus, Taliban captures 10th Afghan city near Kabul.
Taliban's advance across Afghanistan could isolate the capital, Kabul, in 30 days and possibly take the city in just 90.
Also, Australian scientists find a 100-million-year-old flying reptile. Our top story today is in the Tigray region. A new report by human rights group Amnesty International says Ethiopian government forces and Eritrean forces have been systematically raping and abusing hundreds of women and girls in the conflict in the country's northern Tigray region. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
Women and children are bearing the brunt of the suffering in the ongoing fighting in Ethiopia's northern Tigray region. As part of a new report, Amnesty International spoke to 63 survivors of rape and sexual violence from Tigray, in addition to health professionals working with the survivors. Among these survivors, 38 of them said the rapes were perpetrated by Eritrean soldiers. Fiseha Tekla is an Amnesty International researcher for the Horn of Africa.
The victims were detained for more than 24 hours, and in some cases for weeks, while they were being raped by the soldiers. And in the process, we can see that the soldiers were brutalizing the survivors. They were beating them. They were using demeaning words or ethnic slurs against the victims, which shows that sexual violence was used to dehumanize the Tigrayan women in the ongoing conflict.
A 20-year-old woman told Amnesty she was attacked in her home in November 2020 by armed men who spoke Amharic. She was 4 months pregnant. She told Amnesty, "I don't know if they realized I was pregnant. I don't know if they realized I was a person." Amnesty's Adote Akwe told VOA the report is a small snapshot of what is happening on the ground.
The ages of the women, as young as 10 and as old as 62, the use of racial slurs to basically identify them as Tigrayan women, and also the deliberate multiple incidents of rape by many men, even when the women were pregnant.
Akwe told VOA, at the time of publication of the report, the Ethiopian government had not issued a response. But there was a tweet in response from neighboring country Eritrea's Minister of Information, Yemani Meskel. The AI report is transparently unprofessional, and it is evident that the AI makes no effort to get the facts right and cross-check the veracity of the allegations. Asked about the report by VOA, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki had this response.
We are closely engaged with countries in the region, leaders in the region, and certainly horrified by what we've seen as ongoing human rights abuses in Ethiopia.
The State Department has repeatedly called on all parties to the conflict to stop fighting and allow humanitarian and medical relief to get through to millions in Ethiopia who are suffering and facing famine. Ethiopia's Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed Ali is urging civilians to join the country's armed forces as the fighting escalates with Tigray People's Liberation Front fighters. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
In response to the Amnesty report, Ethiopia's government said it had previously acknowledged that, quote, some members of the armed forces have engaged in conduct that is contrary to the clear rules of engagement and direction they have been given, unquote. Ethiopia's statement also accused the human rights group of, quote, sensationalized attacks and smear campaigns, unquote, against the government, while Eritrea's information minister, Yomani Gebremeskel, in a tweet, accused Amnesty of having a, quote, hostile agenda against the country, which borders the Tigray region to the north. Earlier this year, Ethiopia's government said 3 soldiers have been convicted and 25 others indicted for rape and other acts of sexual violence. But Amnesty said no information has been made available about those trials or other measures to bring perpetrators to justice. The Taliban have captured a strategic provincial capital near Kabul, the 10th. The insurgents have taken in a week-long sweep across Afghanistan. The militants raised their white flags imprinted with an Islamic proclamation of faith over the city of Ghazni. The city is just 130 kilometers southwest of Kabul. Seizing Ghazni cuts off a crucial highway linking the Afghan capital with the country's southern provinces, also under assault. Lucy Fielder of Reuters reports U.S. intelligence says the Afghan capital Kabul could fall within 90 days.
The Taliban's advance across Afghanistan could isolate the capital Kabul in 30 days and possibly take the city in just 90. That's according to a U.S. defense official on Wednesday, citing U.S. intelligence. As the militants took control of an eighth provincial Afghan capital, Faizabad. It was the latest in a series of rapid gains around the country as US-led foreign forces leave. The European Union believes the Taliban now controls 65% of the country. The US official said the fall of Kabul wasn't a foregone conclusion, and the Afghan security forces could reverse the momentum by putting up more resistance. All gateways to Kabul, which lies in a valley surrounded by mountains, were choked with civilians entering the city and fleeing violence elsewhere, a Western security source in the city told Reuters. And that made it hard to tell where the Taliban fighters were also getting through. The fear is of suicide bombers entering Kabul's diplomatic quarters, the official said. Faizabad's fall came as President Ashraf Ghani flew to Mazar-e-Sharif, the biggest city of the north, to rally old warlords to its defense as the Taliban closed in. The Taliban are battling to defeat the US-backed government and reimpose strict Islamic law. The speed of their advance has shocked the government and its allies. A commitment to talk peace with the government side has so far come to nothing, as the militants eye military victory.
Allahu Akbar! Allahu Akbar!
US President Joe Biden said on Tuesday he did not regret his decision to withdraw and urged Afghan leaders to fight for their homeland. The United States was providing significant air support, food, equipment and salaries to Afghan forces, he said.
That's Lucy Fielder of Reuters. Tens of thousands of people in Afghanistan have fled recent violence in search of safety as the Taliban takes over more territory. Many left everything behind. VOA's Aisha Tanzin is in Kabul reporting on those who fled fierce fighting in Kunduz.
I'm in Shahr-e-Naw, which is supposed to be a chic part of Kabul. However, what you see around me are lots of people who are destitute with nothing. These are the IDPs from Kunduz. Behind me is a camp, a makeshift camp of tens of thousands of people who had to flee Kunduz when the Taliban attacked. Now, I tried to go inside with my team, but these people were very anxious about having us take pictures of their women and children. People in Kunduz are very conservative. As you see, lots of trash as food and water is being provided for these people. But we heard heart-wrenching stories. We saw people in tears. These people have nothing now, and they have no hope for their future. Several of them said that they see their future is very dark. What is going to happen to them, we don't know. The Taliban have taken over most of the north. Fighting is intense in parts of the south. And what I see around here in Kabul and hear from people in other parts of Afghanistan is that they are more and more hopeless by the day. Aisha Tanzim, VOA News, Kabul.
Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan said on Wednesday that Taliban leaders insist they will not negotiate with the Afghan government as long as Ashraf Ghani remains president. With peace talks stalled, violence in Afghanistan has escalated, spiked sharply as the insurgent groups make rapid territorial gains. Khan said a political settlement was looking difficult under current conditions. Peace talks between the Taliban, who view Ghani and his government as puppets of the United States, and a team of Kabul-nominated Afghan negotiators started last September, but have made no substantive progress. Representatives of a number of countries, including the United States, are currently in Qatar, capital of Doha, talking to both sides in a last-ditch push for a ceasefire before August 31st, the day all foreign troops officially exit Afghanistan. The Pakistani Prime Minister said he felt the Afghan government was now trying to convince the United States to come back and intervene again. U.S. forces have continued to use airstrikes to support Afghan forces against Taliban advances, but it remains unclear if such support will continue after August 31st.
The political settlement is looking difficult right now, and it's looking difficult right now because the Taliban are refusing, and we tried. I tried to persuade the Taliban. This is months back, 3 or 4 months back. The Taliban senior leadership came here, and we tried to persuade them to come to some sort of a political settlement. The only thing that would stop Afghanistan from descending into anarchy is a political settlement. But unfortunately, the Taliban, when they were here, they refused to talk to Ashraf Ghani. Their condition is that as long as Ashraf Ghani is there, we are not going to talk to the Afghan government. They are now trying everything to somehow get the Americans back into Afghanistan. You know, the whole posturing right now is that they're blaming the Americans for this debacle, Pakistan and the Americans. And they are trying to somehow persuade the Americans to actually intervene. I've just had a meeting with Turkey's defense minister, and we will be trying. The best thing is for Turkey and the Taliban to have a face-to-face dialogue so both can talk about the reason why that Kabul airport has to be secured. And so we will be talking to the Taliban to use our influence for them to have a face-to-face talk with Turkey.
That's Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan. Mozambican and Rwandan security forces are clearing some pockets of resistance from insurgent groups as they continue efforts to reclaim some cities. Earlier, they recaptured the port town of Mocimboa da Praia, formerly an insurgent stronghold. In the city of Cabo Delgado, the aid group Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, is taking advantage of the troops' presence to try reaching desperate civilians in need of humanitarian assistance. I spoke with MSF Emergency Coordinator Aitor Zabagokeaskoa for an update on the situation.
And in the center of south of Cabo Delgado is mostly a situation where hundreds of thousands of people has been displaced and they are being settled in different villages and places trying to keep away from the conflict. While in the north, there is more active situation where there are some clashes between the army and the armed groups and people are still moving out from the area, trying to seek safest places to stay than the places where are being affected by the clashes.
We understand that the forces of Mozambique and Rwanda have recaptured some strategic areas. What is going on?
As far as we know from the media, the town of Mocimboa da Praia has been taken a few days ago, but for the moment, we don't know about civilians going back there or people living in the area. So we assume that there are still some military operations going on and people is not allowed. In our case, we were not allowed yet to access the area.
How has the presence of these military forces from neighboring countries affected the local population?
They are already only for a month around, so they had some interaction with the population, but for the moment, there is a smooth relationship, and we didn't register any incident or any problem with the troops that they are coming to support the Mozambican government.
What about your own operations? Has the presence of these troops helped you in trying to reach those areas where people need help?
No, not yet, and I think that it's too early. As far as weight saving, there are active military operations already, and normally civilian actors, they are not welcome in this moment. So for the moment, we didn't see if there is going to be any change on the ground, or this is going to affect other areas that before they were not so much affected by the attacks and the clashes, and now maybe they will be in the future. We don't know that.
What is the greatest problem that you've been facing?
Basically, the access by road or by sea, which is very problematic because the roads are unsafe and the sea routes are also unsafe, and it's quite risky to move out of the areas which are close to or Mueda or Montepuez or Macomia. So there are still 3 or 4 districts which are very dangerous to reach, and that the civilian and the organizations are not able to move. And then maybe now the main issue that could come in the next weeks is that lean season is at the end of the year, and food could be a problem in a few months if the situation doesn't evolve properly. Despite having a very good crop this year, a lot of lands have not been planted during the year because they were vacated, and this is an issue. I would say that food, access to the areas where still some fighting, and in general, clarifying which is going to happen with the hundreds of thousands of people who have been displaced, they are key issues now.
How active is the insurgency, especially with the troops?
We can give some witness of what the people tell us, and they are extremely afraid. They are extremely worried about what they have seen. They have seen a lot of violations of human rights and violence, and they are really scared and they're really terrified, in the sense that they don't want to stay even in cities which are close to the areas where the violence is happening. They don't want to stay. They want to go farther. So yes, the situation is, it has been bad and it continues being bad.
What's your message to the international community and also those who are willing to do something about the situation?
We hope that all parties on conflict will respect civilians and humanitarian aid, and that clearly Cabo Delgado is passing by a crisis situation which deserves support from the international community, in the sense that there is a lot of deficits in food and health and education, in a lot of different fields of life that the people is in need of having a better moment.
That's MSF Emergency Coordinator Aitor Zabagoke Azcoa speaking with me from Cabo Delgado. This is the Voice of America. A new law requiring food delivery companies in Spain to hire delivery riders and drivers as employees rather than freelance contractors has gone into effect. Spain's Trade Union Confederation said the so-called Riders Law that entered into force on Thursday would, quote, put an end to the labor fraud that workers in this sector have suffered for too long, unquote. But it said the labor ministry and inspectors should ensure compliance through monitoring, evaluation, and reporting. Human rights groups are welcoming Indonesia's decision to stop abusive, quote, virginity tests, unquote, on female army recruits, 7 years after the World Health Organization declared they had no scientific validity. The Army Chief of Staff said during annual joint military drills with the United States that applicants should only be assessed on their ability to take part in physical training. He said the military would emphasize whether candidates have color blindness and the condition of their spines and hearts to ensure they are healthy. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu for broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Algerian officials blame arsonists for setting many of the fires raging in the mountainous region east of the capital, Algiers, and in more than a dozen other provinces. Algeria State TV said that almost 70 people have been killed so far, including 28 soldiers who were trying to extinguish the fires and rescue those trapped by flames. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Fires raged Tuesday and into Wednesday in the mountainous region of Tizi Ouzou as fire crews, soldiers, and ordinary residents tried to douse the flames before they spread further. Algerian media reported that at least 79 major fires were burning in at least 17 provinces of the country. While the fires reportedly began Monday, many more appeared to ignite Tuesday, prompting the country's interior minister, Kamel Beljoud, to insist that many had been set by arsonists. He says that some experts are arguing these fires were deliberately set, but they are obviously criminal in nature because it's impossible for dozens of fires to ignite at almost the same time without some criminal hand being behind these acts. At least three arsonists have been captured by Algerian security services during the past several months after several other fires were ignited. Many Western media outlets are downplaying the arson claims and blaming wildfires, excessive heat, or global warming. Ali Mahmoudi, head of the Algerian Forest Department, told State TV that many of the fires ignited suddenly and about the same time Tuesday, leading to speculation that many were deliberately set. He says that initially there were five fires in the Tizi Ouzou region, and then suddenly after 2 p.m., the number of fires started going up hour after hour, and in some cases, minute after minute, until there were 58 fires burning. Canal Algérie, a French-Algerian TV network, warned residents of the country to be vigilant, 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 and keep an eye out for anyone setting fires. It also thanked the military and fire crews for their valiant efforts in extinguishing the fires and saving lives. An Algerian military commander was shown on amateur video ordering his soldiers into a region engulfed with flames to try and save the residents who were trapped in their houses. At least 28 soldiers have been killed in the ongoing fires. Algerian Prime Minister Ayman Ben Abderrahman told Algerians in a televised address Tuesday night that all efforts were being made by the government to compensate those who have lost their homes or livestock or family members. He says that a government delegation is visiting the regions hit by fire to determine the size of losses from the disaster and are being instructed to indemnify all those who have incurred losses, in addition to housing for those who have lost their homes in hotels or government facilities. Algerian media reports the government has contacted a number of regional countries to seek help with planes equipped to combat the fires. Major fires are also raging in Greece, Turkey, Lebanon, and Syria. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Australian paleontologists have discovered a new species of a prehistoric flying reptile in outback Queensland. The pterosaur, named Tapungakashawi, is the largest of its kind ever found in Australia and dates back 100 million years. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Researchers have said the pterosaur, a type of flying reptile, was the closest thing we have to a real-life dragon. With a spear-like mouth and a wingspan estimated at 7 meters, they said it would have soared like a dragon above the vast inland sea that once covered much of outback Queensland. Paleontologists have said it was perfectly adapted to flight, with relatively hollow, air-filled bones. Pterosaur remains are rare and often poorly preserved. So the discovery of a fossil of the creature's jaw in a quarry in 2011 by a local fossicker is significant. For several years it was left in a museum display cabinet before being analysed by a University of Queensland team. Tim Richards, a researcher at the university's dinosaur lab, says it would have been a savage prehistoric predator.
What we're able to do with the jawbone was compare it to closely related pterosaurs that are complete and essentially just extrapolate from there. So we know that the jawbone we're looking at is quite large compared to closely related pterosaurs. We assume, obviously, and it is speculation, that the size of our pterosaur would have been roughly around about a 7 meter wingspan. The skull would have probably been about a meter long.
The new species belonged to a group of pterosaurs known as Anhangarians, which inhabited every continent during the latter part of the Age of Dinosaurs. The name of the new species, Tapungakashawi, recognises the indigenous peoples of the Richmond area where the fossil was found, using words from the now extinct language of the Wanamara Nation in Queensland. The pterosaur has been described for the first time in the journal Vertebrate Paleontology. Pterosaurs were flying reptiles, but weren't classified as dinosaurs, although they lived at the same time. Fossils have shown that Australia had a diverse range of dinosaurs that lived from about 65 million to 250 million years ago. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Human Rights Watch says the thousands of rockets fired by the Palestinian militant group Hamas during the 11-day war with Israel in May, quote, violated the laws of war and amount to war crimes, unquote. The New York-based group says Thursday that it's investigated Hamas rocket attacks that killed 12 civilians in Israel, as well as a misfired rocket that killed 7 Palestinians inside the Gaza Strip. It says that Palestinian armed group, quote, flagrantly violated the laws of war, unquote, during the recent conflict, and said the failure by Israel and Palestinian groups to investigate alleged war crimes underscores the need for an international criminal court probe. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Okoh in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a good evening.